message here regarding the GAA. I think it's a disgrace that people have to book online for a ticket with no opportunity to pay going into a match. What about the elderly who are not computer literate or have no one to book them a ticket? Some of these people supported their club for a lifetime, and on a Sunday I went out for a bit of dinner and a pint and then the match. Surely a volunteer could be placed at the gate to collect entry money from those older people who love their Sunday outing but may be denied this now because of the online ticket policy. And not all pensioners have someone to book a ticket for them in advance, says Marie. Marie, good point there. And we did raise it with Kildare GAA last week, and they said because of COVID-19 and whatever, you know, over the last couple of years, they've gone kind of they've tried to reduce the amount of in-person contact and they want it all done online. I raised that issue with them, that some people don't have access to a computer, they can't book tickets online, and they said that that is the policy that they have implemented going forward. And in terms of getting your OAP rate, you have to do that through the clubs, because a listener rang into us then on Friday afternoon to say that he went onto the Kildare GAA website when he went to purchase a ticket. They only gave him one option, which was general admission for €11, and he was an OAP. I rang the PRO of Kildare GAA and she said that all tickets have to be booked through the club if you're an old age pensioner or indeed a student or any concessions whatsoever. So hopefully that clarifies that, but I do see the point that you're making. Right, let's move on now, because I'm joined on the line by Clane woman Sarah Jane Lavin. She's a self-advocate and board member with Inclusion Ireland, as she has a mild disability and undiagnosed autism, and she joins us now. Sarah Jane Lavin, good morning, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Sarah Jane. You've been fighting all your life, it's been described here, to be recognised and to be seen, and you're also fighting now for the rights of other people. So tell us a bit about your own story.
Well, my story is, I went to a special school, but I was never told I was autistic. We were told we were mentally handicapped. That was it. You left school at 18 and there was nothing else. And I think that definitely needs to change.
Right. You grew up... Are you originally from Clane?
No. I was originally Waterford until I was about 11. Then we moved up to Dublin until I was about 18.
Hmm.
And then when I was 18, we moved to Kildare.
Right.
I've only been in Clane about 5 years.
Right. Now, you didn't speak until you were 12, which is incredible. I mean, and what was that because of, do you think? Was it a lack of confidence?
I think it was because I was traumatised as a very small bit, at about a year old. They brought me in the hospital and tied me down in the bed because I had a gallbladder or something.
Right. And
so it was tied down the bed then. And as Mum says, I went in there singing. I came out of there a vegetable, completely different. And then I just closed everything down.
And you didn't talk then until you were 12. And anyone who wanted to communicate with you had to communicate through your mum?
Yeah, because most of them didn't know what I was saying.
And did you find that hard then, particularly in school? Did you find it difficult?
Like in school, I found school very hard.
In what way?
To say, I actually taught myself to read and that.
And were you always in a special school?
Yes, always. And then when you were 18, you left school and that was it. There was no place then for us to go. We were on our own then.
And in terms of your situation now, are you living independently? Who do you live with? Or?
Well, I'm just living with my mother. I'm still waiting to be housed. I was told I'd have to wait till I'm over 55 before I could get a house.
And you're 53 now?
Yeah, going on 54, so I've been another year.
Right, and you've used the services of St John of God for employment. Where do you work, or where are you employed?
When I was working in the laundry there.
Right.
For about 12 years.
Right, okay.
And then the pandemic came and that was the end of it.
How did the pandemic impact you over the last 2 years?
Well, the last 2 years has changed my life completely. First of all, I'm doing everything, all my work now is done at home.
All your work is done at home?
Most of that now is done at home.
Right.
Before the pandemic, I would have been on the bus every day.
And I'm sure you would have been cocooning as well, over the last couple of years.
I have to cocoon because my mum is 75. So, you know, with her, you know, I had to cocoon because when she... Like, we neither of us got the virus, thank God, but with her, if she had it, she could die, you know. Yeah. Her lungs are not good.
The reason we're speaking to you this morning, Sarah Jane, is that you are, as I mentioned, a self-advocate, but you're fighting for the rights of other people now who have disabilities in terms of education and also public transport. Yeah. So let's deal with those then separately. We start off with transport. What is your issue with public transport at the minute for those who have disabilities?
The issue I have for people with disabilities, first of all, there isn't enough. I can walk, but there isn't enough room for people in wheelchairs. There's only one. Now, I know on the continent where my nephew lives, mm-hmm. we were saying that those buses, we were passing the buses, and he said the whole middle door over there is open, so as many people as wheelchairs as they want can get onto that.
Right.
So I said that's what they need to do here. They need to make, because even having two wheelchair places, it still wouldn't be great, you know. But if you get four people with wheelchairs at a bus stop, only one or two of them will be allowed to get on. And then the others then have to wait an hour for the next one.
Mm. And that's...
The other thing I have against the transport is the sign, you know how it says Connolly?
Yeah.
126 Dublin Connolly. Well, that now doesn't stop there at all. It goes behind Connolly Station.
And is this like, obviously, buses, trains, are trains similar or are they better, would you say, in terms of wheelchairs?
Trains could be better, I'm not too sure, but the trouble with the train is, if I want to get a train to Connolly, I have to go to Maynooth.
Mm.
Or I can go to Salins, but Salins then only leaves you off in Houston anyway. But as I say, there is no railway station in Crane, and as I said, where the river walk is, in the park is where they do the river, they could easily make a station around there, you know.
And as you say,
there's enough room for one.
Because you're able to walk, you're able to get on and use transport normally, but for those who are in wheelchairs, they find it very difficult. And sometimes, you know, there might be a problem with the ramps getting the wheelchairs on or off.
There is. And then what the go-ahead buses have put, where do they put the rubbish bin? In the wheelchair place.
Right, and that's impacting then people who are in wheelchairs.
All right, the bag is on the wall, but as I said, can you imagine sitting beside one of them things?
Mm.
And even the child in the buggy sitting beside one of them things, you know. If the child in the buggy will probably start putting his hand in and start trying to see what's in there.
Have you been in touch with any of the authorities, go ahead to the National Transport Authority, with your concerns, and if so, what have they said?
Well, I met somebody last Wednesday in Clusen Island. I don't know, I can't remember, he didn't say what his name was, but he says that he works with the transport people. He says to me, when he read the article and he points out to me about the transport, he says, well, you know, it's going to be another decade before they do anything about that.
Right, and the article...
Get two wheelchairs.
Yeah, the article you're referring to there is a piece that was in the Liffey Champion last week by Melissa Cook. Now, in terms of education, that's another aspect of life that you feel could be improved for older people with the disability.
Older people.
Right.
Because I went for Trinity the other day and they told me they looked at me. I did the interview and all that, but they looked at me then and said... I was not successful because the transport, the commute would be too much and I wasn't really motivated enough. I was looking at them and saying, you know, because they asked me how I'd get in. So I said, with the bus for 5 minute runs. Because that's one of the things out here, is that it's a topic of conversation at the bus stops from everybody, that half the buses don't run.
Yeah, well, that's out in Clane. The 120 bus is one that has, you know, let those people down in Clane, Alan Wood, and Eden Derry. And we're going to be talking to Aidan Farley about that shortly. But you didn't get the chance to go to college when you were in your teens. You now want to go back.
It was never offered to us. you know, with the result, like, I didn't do an evening or anything, because nobody did. Because, as I say, you went into one of the, you came out, and you could go into an institution if you felt like it, or you just came out of the services altogether. But that's all there was that time. There was nothing. And the reason there are people, I met one girl who left the same school before me, and poor God love her. She says she went into rehab at 22 and never came out again.
Wow.
And I'm looking at her now, she's older than me, you know, and I was looking at the poor girl and I'm saying, God love her, you know.
And with your day-to-day life then, Sarah Jane, I know you have a personal assistant with who helps you with different aspects of your life, but you are quite independent in your own right.
I am.
And you feel as though you'd be able to go to college now and maybe, you know, get that opportunity that you didn't have when you were in your teens.
Oh, yes, definitely, you know. But if people are going to look at me and say no because of the age or whatever, that needs to change.
And you want to make that change for younger people who have disabilities, who are coming up and struggling with transport and with education now.
Yeah, for old people, but particularly the older ones. Because the older ones are grand, they all get in anyway.
Mm.
A lot will if they want, you know.
And you do some work with Inclusion Ireland. Just before we let you go, you're on the board there. Inclusion Ireland, what does that group do for you?
That group actually would do for me was, the first of all, they're trying to get me a job with Inclusion International. Because I went in, I just happened to say to one of them, I was looking for a paid job as an advocate. They immediately were on the ball saying, hang on, this came in. I think you should go for this. But Inclusion International, does this mean I'll be able to work from home? I won't have to travel or anything.
And that would be a huge advantage to you, because
it
as
would.
You say the public
especially
transport,
especially if it's going to be paid work.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know? it's great talking to you, Sarah Jane, self-advocate and board member with Inclusion Ireland. As we mentioned from the outset, Sarah Jane, she's in Clane. She has a mild disability and undiagnosed autism, but she's fighting to improve the lives of other people with disabilities when it comes to transport. She said particularly wheelchair users, when they're using buses, there might only be space for one wheelchair user. She wants to make that a little bit bigger and, you know, improve the capacity there. And also education, more access to people with special needs getting access to education and going on to third level. And while we have started that and work is being done, I think she is making the point that more could definitely be done as well. Very, very good talking to her, and fair play to Sarah Jane for coming on to us this morning on Kildare Today. The article, as I mentioned, was in the Liffey Champion last week, and it was by Melissa Cook, a feature interview with Sarah Jane Lavin, and we just wanted to get in touch with her and speak to her as well. Many thanks for joining us, Sarah Jane.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Let's stay in the Clane Maynooth area then, and Social Democrats Councillor Aidan Farrelly is on the line now. Good morning, Aidan. Welcome to the programme again.
Morning, Owen. Thank you.
We were talking there just before the break to Sarah Jane Lavin from Clane. She's fighting for people with disabilities to have more access to public transport, particularly those in wheelchairs. And we were talking about the 120 bus, the 126 bus, the 846 bus all around the area. You have reached out to the National Transport Authority a couple of weeks ago to get an update on what is happening with these routes. And if we take them individually, the 120... What is the story there, Aidan? Because people in Clane, Allan Wood, Eden, Derry, they're probably shouting at the radio, we can't be standing on the side of the road anymore. This bus doesn't show up. You know, it's not very reliable. What response did you get from the NTA?
A poor one, if I'm honest. And the reason, Owen, I got in touch, and I did listen to Sarah Jane there, and it's really really insightful, I think, to hear from people directly, you know, in terms of the real-life experience of what's going on. We're still at a stage where people in wheelchairs have to give notice of 24 hours plus, by the way. Just to context, I mean, that's in 2022, that's an appalling situation. So we had put down a motion, an emergency motion, at our May Municipal District because, like you say, the litany of people who are in contact with absolute frustration at this stage, Owen, saying, we cannot trust or rely on public transport in a commuter county, there is something tragically wrong with that. We're going in the wrong direction. And the 120 was taken over by a company called Go Ahead Ireland just before the pandemic. And people had reservations at that stage, but I think the pandemic managed to mask many of the real-life situations that were facing commuters, because people suddenly weren't travelling to Dublin as much, there weren't as many numbers, the capacity was at 50%. So it's only in the last 6 months, really, when people have gone back to work that they've seen, hang on a second, there is real issues structurally with the service provided by the go-ahead in this case, by the 120. So we put a motion down to get the NTA, invite them to the municipal district to meet us, to let us communicate some of these real issues facing people, and they refused to meet us. So it was real disappointing that they refused in the first instance to meet us. So I've had to kind of go about it in a number of different ways, and this has been something that I've been working on for years now on. So I got a reply back on email last week, and this was after speaking to Go Ahead directly, where they've confirmed some good news in relation to the 47 drivers that's currently training in their campus. They're hoping by September that those 47 drivers are available, not just for the 120, but a number of those routes, like you say, the 120, the 126, a couple of others, to bring the driver, I suppose, capacity back up to a standard that people can rely. I mean, there are people who are waiting at a bus stop. It's happened to me myself, where you're looking at the live app, and suddenly the bus that you're waiting to show up in 4 or 5 minutes is gone off the live map. Mm. There's nothing. No news, no communication, there's no nothing.
But on that note, Aidan, you have to remember, and we've heard from listeners, I'm sure you have as well, that some people don't have access to social media. Some people don't have access to smartphones where they can look at the live app. There needs to be more communication. Is there not real-time screens at some of these bus stops that can say when a bus is coming or whether it's late?
No. A lot of these bus stops, certainly out in the northwest of the county, there's no information like that available. Maybe in some of the bigger hubs there is, but certainly for Prosperous, for example, and maybe further out you go. Now, there's people losing their jobs because of this. There's people not making hospital appointments. Come September, people are going to be late for school and college again. People missing college exams. This is real. And so when the trust is broken, which is, it absolutely is, it's unequivocal at this point, that the trust between Go Ahead and its customer base is really precarious. What it does is it actually either, number one, incentivizes people, like you say, let's say older people, it incentivizes older people not to get out and travel, which is a big no-no for us. We have to get people out and about. But also, it keeps us using our cars. And again, in 2022, that goes against the policy of trying to encourage us all to stay, leave the car at home. Let's try and rely on... I had a friend who had one meeting in Dublin at 12 o'clock on a Friday. And he said, I'm going to use the bus. He ended up having to leave at 9:30 in the morning and got back at 7 p.m. for one meeting. So if he drove, he could have left an hour before, got home an hour later. So we're really, it's a structural issue that we need to address. Kildare more than many other counties, because we are a commuter county. And if we're going to do this right, the NTA did confirm that the contract is not up for renewal between Go Ahead and the NTA until 2024 for the 120 route. And that has a provision also for 2 1-year extensions. So we're potentially looking at 2026 before Go Ahead are really up for tendering this again. So I want to see that the NTA are putting in these financial penalties where the Go Ahead service has let us down. And that's the real teeth that the NTA has, is to be able to punish companies like this, because we all knew from looking at the track record of this company in the UK before they came to Ireland, that there are issues here. And there's been no surprise to many that this is the manifestation of that. We're seeing that people are continuously let down, and they just lose trust, and eventually they just won't use us.
Okay, and finally then, Aidan, the 846 Sallins Nace Clane link bus, that was cancelled or suspended, and is at the moment, and it wasn't the only one that was suspended around the county. I know there was connections between Kilcullen and Newbridge that were put on hold, but I think work has been done now to get those back in place. Are we going to see the return of the town link between Clane, Sallins Nace?
I'm loath to say yes or no, because I don't want to set people's expectations then for it to be failed. But I can certainly quote what the NTA have said here, and that is that the operator expects to start the 846 again in September. Now, they have stated that the reasons for this suspension include a low demand and a high operating cost, which I acknowledge is probably fair enough, certainly in the latter in terms of the high operating cost. But if we need reliable public transport, then there is an acknowledgement that sometimes that might run at a bit of a loss. but it's still a right thing to do. The 846 has been an institution in Clane, in Sallins and in Naas. It's something that people have relied on to just get to those local areas, maybe to visit friends, get to Naas Hospital, go to employment, for example. And for it to just be pulled was really kind of, I don't want to sensationalise this, Owen, but it was a bit of a shock to the local communities. Now, the 139 is there. Absolutely, it does in some way substitute for the loss of the 846. But I think it will be welcome, and I think it's on all of us to put pressure on the NTA and the operator come September, when, if it doesn't start back up, the NTA expects it to. So okay. Let's just hope that come the next 6 weeks or so, we see those buses back again.
Okay, Aidan Farley, Social Democrats councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, with that update. Thanks indeed for joining us, Aidan, and keep us up to date if any more developments come on that. We want to move on, though, because you may have heard over the weekend that planning permission has been granted for a solar farm near Punchestown Racecourse in Kildare, despite a number of local objections. Dublin-based firm Strategic Power Projects Limited has been given the green light for the 35-year facility on 129 hectares at the townland of Swordlestown outside Naas. The developers say the €100 million solar farm could produce enough power to provide clean energy to 20,500 homes in the area. Now, Ciara, I know that Kildare County Council's planning department, they've received a number of objections on this.
Yeah, over 100 from local residents as well as the equine industry. The racecourse at Punchestown said the plans caused grave concerns and added, in quotes, "The consequences of this development proceeding, whereby there is any potential negative impact, could prove seriously detrimental to the future of Punchestown Racecourse." The Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association said the immediate area contains 5 stud farms with 130 horses stocked at any one time. It added that 230,000 solar panels on prime grazing land is, again in quotes, "not compatible with the business of stud farming." Local historians also said there were several historical monuments in the area, including megalithic standing stones.
Yeah, now the developer said a total of 51 electrical transformer units will be built on the site, which will include security, fencing, landscaping and a CCTV system with pole-mounted cameras. An existing farm entrance will be upgraded along with a new entrance and a 170-metre internal access road. Let's get some reaction to this then. And on the line with us now is Des Leedon. He's spokesperson for the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association. Des, good morning.
Good morning, or good evening to you, as it is for me, because I've just arrived in Melbourne with the stallions that leave Ireland every year to work in the Southern Hemisphere for the Southern Hemisphere breeding season. And I think this is very opportune that we highlight the importance of this industry and can use this as an example, because these horses are net inward fund earners for our country. And the reason that there is so much foreign inward investment into Ireland is not because we're all well-heeled and driving around in very expensive cars. It is because the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association demonstrates very clearly that the majority of our members and the bloodstock breeders of Ireland own very small numbers of mares, but they're very high quality. And that's why these elite stallions come to Ireland, rather than going to the many other locations to which they could be diverted. We're in constant competition with similar industries across the water in the UK and in France.
Okay, and what's your issue with the stud farm, Des? Or what's your issue with the solar farm, I should say, sorry?
The issue at the heart of this so industrial-scale solar proposal is inserting more than 275 acres of solar panels, which are 20 feet wide by 10 feet high, as a solar panel without the base that elevates them further, within established and densely populated stud farm areas that generate rural employment. Within 5 kilometres of Punchestown Racecourse, there are 20 stud farms alone. And that illustrates the way the land has been used for hundreds of years. The proposed industrial-scale solar farm proposal will decimate this industry. It will decimate it because net inward flows of money will not come to an area in which there is industrial scale energy production, when they can go elsewhere.
But are these solar panels going to be built on the land that the horses are using for grazing?
They are being built in the immediate area, and they will create wide-scale disruption during this construction process, which includes using inadequate roads to do so. And so the disruption for anybody who's in this business during this period will be very significant. Furthermore, and it's not generally appreciated, the Lloyd's Livestock Committee, which insures these horses worldwide, will not insure them during the construction phase because of the perceived danger to the animals and to the people that work with them during the construction of these facilities. And remember, they don't exist elsewhere. If you fly, as many of your listeners will have done, into Beauvais on their way to Paris, they cross over the Normandy area. There you will see wind power. You do not see solar power panels in the way that is envisaged here. The same is true in Kentucky. The same is true in the Hunter Valley here in Australia. So there is no question of the bloodstock industry being against green energy or industrial-scale solar farms. But there is not a stark choice between having industrial-scale solar farms and the bloodstock industry. 67% of the land of Inkild Air is used for agriculture. About 5% of that is used for stud farm and breeding operations. We're asking planning permission departments to be mindful of locating any noise-producing industrial development adjacent to the 5% of stud farm land. There's a remaining 62% of available agricultural land that can be used for renewable energy whilst allowing the stud farm industry to continue to quietly and productively operate. Industrial facilities, by their nature, are incompatible with stud farm operations.
Okay, we'll leave it there in terms of the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association's view. We wanted to get that. We also reached out to Punchestown Racecourse, and I believe we've had a phone call back from them in the last 5 minutes, but not in time to get, I suppose, their view to bring it to air this morning. But we'll hopefully have an update for you tomorrow morning. But as Ciara mentioned, Punchestown essentially saying that the plans cause grave concerns and added the consequences of this development proceeding, whereby there is any potential negative impact could prove seriously detrimental to the future of Punchestown Racecourse. We also got in touch with the company Strategic Power Projects, and its CEO Paul Carson has been in touch with a statement, and it is as follows. This is the fifth renewable energy project approved for Strategic Power Projects in the Republic of Ireland since the announcement of our partnership with Gresham House in October last year. We are incredibly encouraged by the outcome of this planning decision. The deployment of solar PV in Ireland is urgently needed in order to meet its target for 80% renewable electricity on the network by 2030. Developments such as the proposed project are not only essential to achieving renewable energy goals, but also to achieving the wider goal of decarbonising the economy in Ireland in line with the Coalition Government's Climate Action Plan. Furthermore, when operational, the development at Swordlestown will have a positive and long-term positive impact on the local, regional and national economy. It will generate direct and indirect employment during both the construction and operational phases. It will provide a form of agriculture diversification, which is essential to sustain the country's rural economy and will help meet Ireland's climate targets. Swordlestown was carefully selected for solar development after detailed assessments. Our team carried out extensive surveys and considered all aspects of potential socio-economic impacts, which were detailed in a very comprehensive planning application. We then addressed a request for further information from Kildare County Council through another submission. The statement from Strategic Power Projects goes on to say the team carried out extensive local community engagement and were generally well received in the area. The consultation process allowed us to consider the overall plan, and we took local concerns on board, which resulted in significant amendments to the project, including a reduction in scale. As renewable energy developers, we are experiencing a sea change in public opinion of these projects. Reaching Ireland's climate change targets is everyone's one's responsibility, and this message is now nestled firmly in the public mindset. As the competent planning authority, Kildare County Council is clearly satisfied that our project is acceptable in planning and environmental grounds. The decision demonstrates that Kildare County Council is committed to supporting renewable energy projects in the area and playing their part in addressing the significant challenge of delivering on climate actions. So that is the response from the company Strategic Power Planning, as planning permission has been granted for a solar farm near Punchestown Racecourse in the townland of Swordlestown, as I say, and it's a solar farm, 35 years, and it's on 129 hectares, and we'll keep on top of it as well with all the relevant stakeholders in that. When we come back after the break, we'll get to your messages, and indeed we'll catch up on the local sporting action that took place over the weekend.
Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, let's get to the local GAA action, and then we'll catch up on the messages. And on the line now is KFM's two reporters from over the weekend, Ger McNally and Seamus Dillon. And lads, if we start with the Joe Mallon Motor Senior Football Championship, and in Group A, Ger, you watch both of these games, Naas against Easttown and Athy versus Maynooth. Wins for Naas and Athy here.
Yes, that's right on, yeah. Sorry, I'm just trying to get my notes together here. Yeah, Naas and Athy. The Naas against Easttown one was, Naas were very, very dominant in the first half by far the better side. They were a goal and 7-1 ahead after 29 minutes. They had got a wonderful start, and when they were awarded a penalty for a foul after just 9 seconds, and Eamon Callaghan converted that. So it was 1-7-2 at a half time break. But it had to be said that I suppose Naas, you know, probably understandably, they took the foot off the pedal a little bit. The game was won at that stage, and they were a little bit going through the motions, I thought, in the second half, and allowed Easttown a bit of a run on them at one stage. During that second half, Easttown scored 5 out of the 6 points, but Naas did rally. They scored 3 late points, so there was never any doubt or danger of the results slipping away from them, and in the end it was a comfortable win, job done. But I suppose they will play a lot better later on in the championship. And for a tie then as well, a little bit similar for them, that they've started very well. They were a goal and 7-4 ahead after 25 minutes, having scored an excellent goal in the 8th minute through Kieran Farrell. But Maynooth got right back into the game then, and with a goal and a point late in the first half, John McAndrew, his shot squirming through the hands of James Roycroft in the Athy goal. But Athy started the second half very well, got 3 early points, and they kicked on from there. I pretty much controlled the game, and so it was a fairly comfortable win. The likes of Mike Kelly and Kevin Feely were superb for Athy, while Neil Flynn showed well for Maynooth. But yeah, that game in the second round of the groups now between Athy and Naas is definitely one to look forward to and keep an eye on.
In Group B then, these were the games that took place on Friday evening, and Ger, Selbridge with a 2-point win over Sarsfields, perhaps a surprise, but a good performance from Selbridge.
Yeah, I don't know if you could call it a surprise. I suppose maybe people would have had Sarsfields down as the favourites, but Selbridge are such a good team that it's not a massive surprise. And indeed, of course, they beat Sarsfields in the group stages last year. It was a game that probably Sarsfields edged over the full course of the game. I thought they were a slightly better side. They were 10-6 ahead with about 20 minutes to go, and maybe just were satisfied with that victory, satisfied with the result at that time, and crept into their minds maybe just to protect their lead. Selbridge actually went out to 14 players then shortly after that.
Okay, we appear to have lost Ger there, so we'll get him back in a moment. But Seamus Dillon, the other game in Group B, that was Clane against Raheens, and a good 1-point win for Clane.
An absolute cracker of a game in Hawkfield, played in front of a sizeable crowd. Two first-half goals for Raheens from Colin Power after 7 minutes, and Rob Thompson after 15 put them 4 points in front, and they led 2-7-8 at the half-time break, and certainly all to do for Clane in that second half. But they started brightly, and wing half back Tyke Montgomery, who sort of came between midfield and wing back throughout the game, but he had a super game for them, and he got a goal after 3 minutes of the second half to reduce the gap back to 3, and by the 43rd minute Clane had pushed in front from 2 points in a row from Brian McLaughlin. They went 1-14-2-10 in front at that stage, and there's all to play for. Colin Ryan equalised again for Raheens, 1-14-2-11, and Clane, although Paddy Woodgate and Rob Thompson were 2 late points for Raheens, it was Shane O'Sullivan
with two frees either side of a Cormac Vizard point. The left lane, good winners and scoring at 1.17 to 2.13, and Bahamas will face into Sarsfield next and then have to face Selbridge. So it's all to play for them, but playing were impressive enough throughout the game, and so it was a very good victory.
Yeah, Ger McNally is back with us. Ger, just to finish up there on that game between Selbridge and Sarsfield.
Yeah, as I was saying, it was 10-6 at about 20 minutes to go in favour of Sarsfield, and they'd been the better side through the first three quarters of the game. And Selbridge then went down to 14 players when Kevin Flynn was shown a black card for a foul on Ben McCormack. And at that stage, it really was there for Sarsfield to push on and go from 4 points ahead to really go ahead and take the game. But actually, during the 10 minutes that Selbridge were down to 14 men, they outscored Sarsfield by 2-1. And then the 58 minutes, the crucial moment of the game, I talked to a few people after the game and still undecided whether Kevin Flynn actually meant his goal or was it a shot at a point, but in the end it looped into over the head of Sarsfield's goalkeeper Mark Courtney Gore, and I think it was slightly lucky, to be honest. I think he was shooting for a point and it just dropped over the head of the Sarsfield's goalkeeper, and that put Selbridge ahead with a point by a point going into the last minute of normal time. It was 5 minutes added on, and Sarsfield's their chances of getting back into the game suffered a blow when Shane Doyle got a black card as well, and in the end Liam O'Flynn scored a late point to give Selbridge a 2-point win.
In Group C then, Moorfield and Johnstown Bridge ended in a draw. Johnstown Bridge though were 6 points up at half time, while Carberry had a good win against Round Towers, 111-8.
Yeah, a good game between Moorfield and Johnstown Bridge. Johnstown Bridge certainly showed what they're capable of in the first half before letting him slip away from them a little bit in the second half. Sean Hurley was excellent for them through the first half. He scored 3 points, and they were getting a lot of joy of kind of long direct balls in towards either Hurley or Daniel Flynn in around the full forward line. Well, Paul Cribben also had an excellent game as well. It was 9-3 in favour of Johnstown Bridge at half time, and Moorfield have been pretty poor through that first half. Some of their shooting left a lot to be desired in particular, and they could have been out of the game really. Shane Flynn hit the post in the last minute of normal time at the end of the first half, but the change of weather certainly didn't help Johnstown Bridge. I don't think it absolutely poured down in the second half on Saturday evening, but Aaron Masterson was superb for Moorfield. He ended up with 6 points, including a 61st minute equalising free. As they came from six down to level it up. But I suppose a big feature of the last quarter was Moorfield taking off their goalkeeper Tom Kinsella, bringing on Ian McDonald as a makeshift goalkeeper really, because he didn't spend any time between the posts. He played more or less as an extra outfielder, and that helped Moorfield get back on level terms. They did for the second week in a row though, when the game was level, have a 45 with the last kick of the game, an opportunity to win it as they had against Nathan the primary round the previous week. But it was a difficult kick, to be fair to Aaron Masters, and it was the only one he'd missed all evening. But they had to settle for an 11-point each draw.
All right, and Carberry and Towers then?
Seamus is at that one down the road.
Oh yeah, Seamus, you were at Carberry and Towers, 111-18 in favour of Carberry, and a good victory there.
Yeah, played again, as Gerard said, in Newbridge. They had the rain, and we had it in spades down in Newbridge, down in Hawkfield as well. Towers led 1-4 to 5 points at the half-time break. It was a penalty from Neil Scanlon after 8 minutes to push them 1-1 to a point ahead, and they kept that lead right up to the half-time break. Two excellent frees from goalkeeper Colin English, one of the last one just on the stroke of half-time, and the second half Carberry came out with renewed effort, and Jack Cully and Morgan Flaherty with two quick points, and then a goal from Andrew Dermody. It was Jack Cully's free that caused a bit of consternation in the Towers defence, and it brought back out, and Andrew Dermody pulled on it, and for the first time Carberry were in front 1-7 to 4 points since the opening minute, and they kicked on then with Jimmy Dunn, Tommy Gill, Jack Cully points to run out convincing 1-11 to 1-8 winners in the end. Towers were never really looked like they were going to get back into the game at that stage, and conditions didn't help for any good football. So Towers or Carberry, good win for them.
Staying with you then, Seamus, and briefly on this one if you would, Clonmacnoise 1-8 to 9-point winners against Kilcock in Group D.
Yeah, that was I suppose what you would have called a bit of a local derby. Clonmacnoise, an early goal from Keane McMonagall again from a penalty after Jack Robinson had been fouled, put them 3 points in front after 6 minutes, and Kilcock did come back into it, and Shane Farrell with two frees, Daniel Courtney and Darren McArdle, they were level just before half time, and it was two late points in the opening half. Killian Galligan and Mark Graham left it 1-4 to 5 at that break, but in the second half it was tight affair, wound up 1-8 to 9 points. It was Robinson with two late points and a point from Mark Graham left Clonmacnoise winners. It was a tight game, not very good football in it all, to be honest, but some good performances. Shane Farrell was a standout for Kilcock, and the McMonagall's keen, and Jack Robinson for Claharinka. Was a good win for Claharinka.
The other game in Group D, Ger, St. Lawrence's 113-9 winners against Confi.
Yeah, St. Lawrence have put themselves in a strong position now to go on and win this group and claim a quarter-final place. Their second-half performance fully justified the end result. The first half was kind of low-quality and a low-key affair. Lawrence was led by 5 points to four. Sorry, we're down by 5 points to four at the half-time break. But they really came storming into the game in the early part of the second half. They scored 4 points inside the first 5 minutes after the restart. Felix Lawler had a hand in all of those, and he had a really pivotal role to play in the Lawrence's victory in the second half. He was superb. He was involved in everything, including the Lawrence's goal that more or less put the field on the victory in the 48th minute. His shot hit the top of the post. Adam Steed got the rebound and passed inside to another standout performer for Lawrence's on the day, Patrick Fogarty, and after scoring some excellent points throughout the match, he was able to get a goal as well, and that pretty much set up Lawrence's for the win. So yeah, good win for Lawrence's there. But yeah, I suppose worrying times for Confi that they face into now. Two crunch ties coming up now against Clonmacnoise and Kilcock.
And just lastly then, in the Elshebeena Thai Intermediate Football Championship, the results: Leixlip 113, Castledermot 13 points, a draw, Salins 312, 2 Mile House 111. In Group B, Allan Wood 414, Rathangan 112. Group C, Ballyteague 18 points, St Kevin's 13. And Group D, Monastreven 210, Suncroft 113. Seamus, just to briefly mention, perhaps the Leixlip and Castledermot game seemed like a decent one, ending in a draw. Salins are now top of Group A after defeating 2 Mile House. Good win for Allan Wood, but also Ballyteague, Jimmy Hyland scoring 10 points.
Yeah, probably the standout performance of the afternoon in those Elshebeena Intermediate Championship games. Leixlip and Castledermot was tight affair, 5 points to four to Leixlip at half time. Leixlip pushed 110 to 9 points in front after a Darren O'Connor goal just before the 50th minute, but poor late Kevin Keaton freeze, the last of them in the 65th minute, ensured that they got the draw. Allan Wood were very impressive with a 4-14 victory, 2-1-12 over Rathangan. Two late goals when Rathangan were pushing on to try and get back into the game in the closing minutes from Aaron. Two goals from Aaron Dunn, but Allan Wood were very impressive. 21 points against Suncroft, 4-14 on Saturday. Noel Mooney will be very happy with his charges as in that Group B section. Suncroft and Monastreven ended in a draw. It was 2-6 to 6 points to 1-6 at half time. Wayne Fitzpatrick and Pádraig Nash with two goals for Monastreven. Jack Doyle with a goal for Suncroft. Suncroft got their noses in front towards the closing minutes of the game, but it was a late point from Wayne Fitzpatrick from right out on the sideline, and the one person that you would have entrusted with the left foot, he popped over a very good point to leave it a draw there. And the last game then on in the Intermediate Championship was that one with Ballyteague and St. Kevin's, tight enough at the half-time break. It was 9 points apiece, but in that second half it was only 4 points from St. Kevin's in that second half, and it was 9 points from Ballyteague. But Jimmy Hyland's standout performance, he just absolutely did everything that you would expect of him. He was up and down the field as well in the closing minutes, back in defence, came out of from a ruck in the middle of the square, and Jimmy came out with it there. But 10 excellent points from him, and the standout performance of the weekend. But a good victory for Ballyteague, and they'll be very happy after a luckless performance the previous week against Leixlip.